My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Sydney's Akasha Brewing Company was founded by former IT professional and passionate home brewer Dave Padden in 2015. It has quietly grown into one of the Inner West's larger independent breweries, having quickly developed a reputation for high-quality, hop-driven beer styles. The year 2022 was pivotal for Akasha. The company undertook a $1.7 million equity crowdfunding raise that supported its diversification into barrel-aged beers, as well as funding the addition of two hospitality venues, the Barrel Room in Leichhardt and the Edwards in Newcastle. Akasha has also ramped up its sports sponsorship program, becoming official beer partner of the Sydney Kings and Sydney Flames professional basketball teams. Exciting times all round then for Akasha. But as Dave acknowledges in this episode, it's against the backdrop of some very difficult trading conditions for small independent breweries. There's been multiple casualties in this sector already in 2023. So later on in this interview, Dave and I reflect on some of that unfortunate news and discuss some of the steps Akasha is taking to ensure its financial sustainability as a business. Well, Dave Padden. Great to finally have you with me on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Only had to wait 4.5 years. Sorry, mate.
I've been waiting for the call for a long time. It's finally here.
Yeah, well, there's been so much going on in your world. I thought it was an opportune time to get you on.
It's been a big year. Yeah, we had some pretty big plans in place, which we've been thinking about for the last couple of years. And in July, or prior to July, we really had to think about how we were going to fund those projects. Brewing companies aren't necessarily flushed with cash at any particular time, so we had to think long and hard about how we'd fund some of those projects. And so we decided on crowdfunding, raised just shy of $1.7 million, which was amazing. A lot of great advocates and ambassadors now on board as shareholders, which is great. But when we went into that process, we had, as I said, we had a number of projects that we wanted to work on, one of them being the Barrel Room in Leichhardt, some production updates, as well as another venue that at the time we were looking at regionally. So yeah, we went headlong into all those different projects over the last year, which has gone well.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised when I heard about the sour beer project, but just because for as long as I've known you, it's just been American hops and IPAs and nothing much outside of that. Yeah. But you've obviously sort of had a bit of a passion for these sour beer styles just quietly in the background.
Yes, somewhat quietly, but we're unapologetically for the last 8 years been headlong into hop forward styles and IPAs, and that's what we love and what we love to brew and what we based our brand on at Akasha over that 8 years, and found a lot of success in that. We've always said that we'll only work on projects that we're all passionate about, and one of those passions that we're always talking about in the brewery was not just ours, but barrel project beers. So we had a barrel program that we kicked off a couple of years ago now, well before the raise. So by last year, we'd already had a bunch of beers already been resting in barrels for quite a long time. So some of those being clean beers, so things like stouts and quads and all sorts of wonderful, prominently darker beers sitting in barrels. But then our sour beers as well, which is, and you probably hear in my voice, I get a lot happier in talking about. And I personally love sour beers and, well-made ones, not just kettle sours. We've played with kettle sours in the past, but really playing around with proper sort of lambic cultures and all that kind of stuff. So we've been working on that project for a while, and we had to be really careful that we didn't distract from our hop forward brand. So we made the decision to separate it a little bit, create a new venue, and that was a full hospitality venue to showcase these products separated from the traditional Akasha brand, and that's where the Barrel Room came from.
Tell us about some of the beers that have been available at the Leichhardt venue so far.
One of the first beers that we brewed, again, well before the actual venue, was the Sour Blonde Ale. That, with those lambic cultures, they take a long time to develop, and it was about 2 years before we actually released that in a bottle. So it's something that we're very proud of. It's a blonde style, you know, traditional lambic cultures, essentially, put into a traditional sort of Belgian style ale, and all served in 750ml bottles, all bottle conditioned. That's probably a great example of something we're passionate about, something we're really proud of as well. On the other side of things, we've got a couple of Imperial Stouts aged on oak that we've released, a Belgian quad. We've even taken one or two of our beers that we've brewed in the brewery at Akasha. So actually one I left with you earlier, which was our triple amber ale that we brewed last year. We took some of that aside and aged that in on oak for another 6 months as well to really showcase how different these beers can be once they're aged on oak compared to the original beer.
And what sort of barrels have you gotten access to?
We've got a very strong relationship with Robert Steen out in Mudgee. We do a number of collaborations with them throughout the year. We're getting a lot of their Chardonnay and Riesling barrels, which particularly the sour ones we like to age in on white wine barrels. So getting a lot of barrels from those guys, but also just being relatively opportunistic about what's going around. And, you know, there's a bunch of, so we've done some Jack Daniel's barrel aged stuff. We've done some beers in Pedro Ximenez barrels. All sorts of different things, and it's really exciting. We've done some, you know, the same beer into different barrels, which create such a different product depending on usually what was in that barrel beforehand. So pretty exciting.
With the crowdfunding, I mean, is it too early to see whether the theory that people tend to have about having these shareholders that become ambassadors for the brand that support you in buying your product, has some of that come to pass yet, or is it too early to see whether it's been borne out in that way?
We're pretty good. We've particularly as time has progressed, the brewery has grown. We've got a much stronger focus on marketing than we have in the past. So we are able to track it fairly well. Simply, are our ambassadors or our shareholders buying beer? They definitely are, and they're buying quite a lot of it. So I think we've certainly seen that relatively immediate impact. But one of the big reasons we went down the path of crowdfunding was, yes, it's a great way to get people who are already fans of our brand involved in the brewery and funding these projects. But we're also looking at ways to really get what we call these super fans who are already big fans of our brewery and make them that true ambassador and out there spreading the good word around the place. And a little bit harder to track, of course, but anecdotally we think that's starting to happen. But again, it's a bit hard to track exactly that, you know, if a new customer comes in the brewery, whether or not it came from that sort of marketing or traditional type marketing. So we are communicating with them a lot. Certainly, we have them into the brewery quite. We've already held quite a number of events. We get them in for Christmas parties. We're doing a special, we call them the Inner Circle, our ambassadors, and they're coming in to do a special brew with us in a couple of weeks' time.
All 500 odd of them.
Definitely not all of them. Luckily, not all of them are in Sydney, but yeah. Even for that, we often create a bit of a draw for it. So we had 100 people interested to come down and help brew that beer. Can't have them all in the brewery, so we had to cut that down to 25. So really, we want them involved. We don't want them just standing around and watching. We want them to get involved in brewing this beer. It will be a quite a nice barrel-aged style of beer, so we want them to help brew the beer. We bottle the beer. All of our members will then have access to it. But we want them, you know, people to be proud of it and show it to their families and drink it at the Christmas table and all those really cool things. So we do have them very, very involved with the brewery, not just, you know, thanks for the cash and they're not hear from us again. They have become a very, very critical part of all sorts of different things we do in the brewery.
What about the Leichhardt venue? How's that been trading so far? I'm very familiar with the site from the Creek and Cello, the venue that used to be there. Norton Street Leichhardt had its ups and downs and probably more recently down. So I was just sort of, I haven't managed to come in and check out what you've done with the space and have a pizza and have a few beers, but I look forward to doing so. So how's it all going?
It's going well. It's a bit of a tough trading environment out there, I think.
Anyone in hospitality.
Anyone in hospitality. So I think, you know, with that in mind, we're incredibly happy, I think. finding the right staff was difficult at first, but again, we've been around long enough that we attracted some really great candidates over the last 6 months, and we developed a really amazing team there on the ground. Customers are coming in. I think we opened in October last year, and certainly for that first few months leading into Christmas and New Year, we were very busy with people that already knew us, Akasha fans. Yeah, we probably lost a little bit of business from the tap room in Fivesock, because we saw just everybody wanting to check out the new venue, and particularly the barrel-aged stuff. So the beers that we brewed for the venue are only available in the venue. So if people want to try them, that's the only way they can get their hands on them. So that generates a lot of interest and a lot of people coming down. And we found in January it's a very quiet neighbourhood during the school holidays, and now we're seeing it pick up again moving into March and April. So pretty happy with it. We're also really identified that people want to use the space for functions as well, and that seems to be a part of the business that we're starting to focus a bit more on over the next few months, and we'll moving forward as well. So really happy so far.
What about Newcastle? That's still pretty early days. I think it was very end of last year.
Right before Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a long drawn out process.
Yeah.
Where that was born from, we had the barrel room was a showcase for our barrel age program. We also identified that hospitality was something that we wanted to get further into. We had the tap room for the last 7 or 8 years, but like I gave us the opportunity to branch out into hospitality and the barrel room, showcasing those beers. We also wanted to create another brew pub experience, essentially, somewhere in New South Wales and regionally. So we eventually settled on Newcastle, where we have a quite a large following outside of Sydney, probably our biggest following outside of Sydney. Our original plan was to build a brew pub from scratch, so find a warehouse space, create the hospitality offering and a small brew pub, so a small brewery as well. During that search, we came across the Edwards, which was an existing hospitality venue that was looking at that time to perhaps selling. So it was the chance for us to move forward on the hospitality side straight away. The Edwards it's an amazing venue, one we knew very well, but a group of people and an offering on that restaurant and bar side that was already delivering exactly and probably more than we ever imagined on that hospitality side, but also had a space big enough to put the brewery in as well. So gave us a real head start. We're able to jump in, be operating straight away, and then give us a little bit of time to incorporate the business into the brewery and then build the brewery later in the year.
Yeah, so when's the brewery going to be operational, and what happens to the branding of that venue? Does it stay as the Edwards, is it the Edwards by Akasha or something along those lines?
Yeah, hit the nail on the head. That's exactly, and that's the way we've headed with, it's the Bower Room by Akasha in Leichhardt. The Edwards is such a strong brand up there, it would be a bit silly of us just to throw it out. So we'll leave it as the Edwards, the Edwards by Akasha, which we're going through that branding exercise over the next few months. Brewery, I've been around long enough not to get too excited. Built enough breweries in my time to know that they take a little while. So realistically speaking, by the end of the year, we'd like to have something in there. Yeah, all dependent on council and all those wonderful things that I said I'd never do again.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me about, how you guys are going as a business now. Like, I mean, one thing I've kind of always found with Akasha is you've sort of flown under the radar a little bit. Like, you've very quietly grown and been very successful without appearing with your name up in lights in the hottest 100. You kind of have your own fan base that maybe operates a little bit outside of that. You can kind of correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that. You must have thought a lot about that. Your volumes are significant from what I know, but you're not kind of charting right at the top of the hottest 100. So tell me about what you think has made Akasha, successful.
I think we're a pretty genuine brand. I think we're not out there in lights, as you say, but we've really stuck to our knitting over the years and been pretty protective about who we are and what we do. We wanted to make a brand around what we love, which is, if we put the barrel room aside, we're talking about the hop forward styles that we've focused on quite pigheadedly over the years has really helped us develop a brand that people can trust in that space. So we wanted to make sure that if anyone saw our brand on the shelf, they would recognise it and know that, well, that's probably going to be a pretty good IPA because, that's what those guys do and they do pretty well. So I think, yeah, we've gone about it quietly, but relatively successfully, and built relatively organically, you know, over the years. And year on year, we continue to grow. And even this year, I mean, to answer your question around how we're going, certainly things have slowed down a bit, but we're still growing. We're certainly not going backwards. Obviously, if we put the growth in the new businesses aside, just in look at the brewery, we'll still grow this year in what has been, it's been a pretty tough 6 months.
Yeah, well, we might talk about that a little bit more in a bit. But looking at like the, you know, the product mix for you guys, it was always, you know, the Hopsmith IPA was always your flag bearer.
Yep.
But I feel like there's been a little bit more emphasis on some more sessionable beers like, you know, Canada Bay XPA, Super Chill.
Yep.
You know, how has the product mix changed and how significant are those other beers in your lineup these days?
Yeah, well, I think the exciting thing for us is Hopsmith and Freshwater, the two original beers. We launched with Freshwater as our very first beer, closely followed by Hopsmith a couple of months later, 8 years ago, are still our two biggest sellers, which I think testament to a few things. One, that they've stood the test of time, which is amazing, and we still love those beers, and they haven't changed much at all over that time. But also, when we talk about our brand and what we focus on, it's not just hop forward and IPAs, it's a real West Coast style focus for us as well. Whilst we have Cloud 9 as our hazy offering, we're always proponents of more along the West Coast style. And whilst obviously hazies are not going anywhere, we've certainly seen a bit of a resurgence back to West Coast over, particularly over the last year, which has played in our favour a little bit. So those two brands are still going strong. Having said that, we believe the market is heading towards a bit more of an approachable, lower alcohol sort of way. We didn't dabble in the non-alc space at all, even the mid-strength space. We tend to only dabble in a little bit with our Little Smith, but that's about it. That sort of 4-5% range is where we believe a lot of the growth is going to be over the next few years. And so, yeah, things like CBX, the Canada Bay XBA, the Freshwater, and now our newer product, the Super Chill, really is where we see a lot of the growth. And Super Chill, which was released a bit over a year ago, is absolutely flying for us at the moment. It's easier to approach, a little bit cheaper, a little less hoppy than normal, but still is an Akasha beer when you're drinking it. And yeah, we're seeing a lot of growth in that right now. So it's been ranged across all the chains. Indies are really getting on board with it, and a lot of our sort of promotional effort as well focused around that. So yeah, but as I said, I think our core two beers are still that Hopsmith and Freshwater.
Yeah, which is number one?
Freshwater.
It'd have to be.
Yeah, sure. Just because it's a pale ale.
Hopsmith is up close to 7% or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did it get dialed back a little bit at one point?
We dialed it back slightly, yeah. But it's still at 6.8, which is pretty high.
What about my favourite in the core range, which is Mosaic?
Yes.
I think it's an absolute cracker. How's that going?
It kind of just ticks along. It's funny, you know, over the years, if you ask people what their favourite Akasha beer, whether it's us, whether it's our customers, it's usually not one of the two that everyone buys. And the amount of people that tell us that Mosaic is their favourite beer, and then they'll go and buy a 4-pack of Hopsmith. I don't know why, how that works, but it is a beer. We all love it as well. It is an amazing beer. But I think, I don't know if you remember a beer called Fire Within that we had when we first launched, which was an American Amber Ale. Again, hands down, everybody used to love that beer, but nobody used to buy it. So Eventually we had to retire it. But we're not going to retire the Mosaic, so don't worry about that. It still ticks along very well. But
But
certainly not up there with Hopsmith, that's for sure, in terms of sales volumes.
Now, I noticed that the latest product I've seen you guys release, which I assume is a limited release, is in honour of your partnership with the Sydney Kings. How long has that been going on for now, and has that been a good partnership for you guys?
Yeah, it's been great. It's one of the things that we've done a lot of sports sponsorship, but usually with our, you know, some of our local teams. So we sponsor the West Harbour Pirates, which is the Shoot Shield that sits under the Super Rugby level. That's been something we've been doing for 3 years. Some of our more local, you know, soccer and all sorts of different little teams that we, you know, as part of our sort of community, sort of giving back to our community, if you like, which is important. This opportunity came up for us this year. It was a big step up in terms of sponsorship, both in terms of what it costs us, but also, you know, it was a great opportunity to get our brand into, you know, in front of and in the hands of people that may not have heard of us before. And that's probably been the biggest thing for us. So it's been really exciting. We've definitely learnt a lot, you know, dealing with a professional sports team Yeah, just in terms of how to do that, how to get the beer into people's hands. It's difficult sometimes in stadiums like Kudos, where we play, where we have our home games, where we can't really get into the stadium itself because it's they have their own relationships with the big guys. But whilst advertising is one thing, we get it up in lights, and trust me, it's damn amazing to see the Akasha brand up on the LED boards down on the court when you've got 18,000 people there. It's a real spin out and blows me away every time. But how do we actually get the beer and get people trying the beer? So a whole bunch of strategies there, and we are getting a lot of feedback from people who are going to the games about the beers and, oh, I tried your beers on the week. Or, you know, we have what they call the chairman's lounge before and after the game that we can have our beers in there. We can give out beers. We've done tastings down there. So we are getting our beers into the hands of people that haven't had no idea who we were before. But we are getting a lot of feedback from people that are drinking our beer, and they're letting us know about that. The other thing we did was release the beer that you mentioned when they did win the championship, which is great, of course. We released the championship beer, and that sold out in about 24 hours. So,
oh, wow.
So that tells us a lot.
Yeah.
And these are fans that are buying the beer. So.
And how big is that production run?
It was about 200 cases, so you know, a lot of these guys are buying just in, you know, 1 or 2 4-packs as well. So to sell it out in less than 24 hours is a bit of a thrill. So we wish we'd made more.
Yeah, for sure. You probably still can.
Probably still could, but again, you know, you just it's a good experience.
Flog it too hard.
You don't want to flog, that's right.
Be sitting on product.
Yeah, so that was exciting.
You guys went through a pretty significant rebrand going back a couple of years ago now. And, you know, as always happens when there's a rebrand, everyone's got an opinion on it. Some of the opinions are, you know, complimentary, and others are like, what the hell have they done? How's it actually gone? You must have some intel on, you know, whether it's helped you.
Yeah, it's definitely that year. We did it during the first year of COVID. We were very successful because a lot of our beer does go into pack rather than kegs. You know, during that 2 or 3 years, a lot of people were drinking at home and bottle shops were going quite well. So it was, you know, a relatively successful period for us anyway. But certainly that 6 months after the rebrand, we grew something like 40% our volume. So it's safe to say it's not all based on COVID, a nice mix of that and the rebrand being very successful as well.
What's happening with your limited release packaged products now? Because it feels to me like maybe it's slowed down a little bit. It was very intense for the first year or so after you did the rebrand. They were coming thick and fast, I remember.
Yeah, and that's another COVID-based thing. For whatever reason, and there's a lot of commentary around this as well, during COVID, people did want different stuff. There's a bit of both. I think during the first 6 months of COVID, what we saw were people going back to beers that they trusted. So again, Freshwater and Hot Smith sales by the case went through the roof. People going back to something they trust. And then as time went on, people were wanting a lot more seasonals than they did before. And we were at a point where we were doing one every 2 weeks and selling out, you know, within a week or two. It was insane for quite a while there. As we came out of COVID and over the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen the demand for seasonals really drop off. You're exactly right. We've gone back to one a month at most, and probably more like one every 6 weeks. What we don't want to see is we don't want to see more than one or two limiteds on the shelf at any one time. Our beer business is about core beers. It's about the Freshwater and the Hot Smiths and the Super Chills. That's where our focus is, and that's where you can build a sustainable business. It's very difficult to build a business on you know, turning over seasonals. You're relying on that next seasonal for your income, which makes me a little bit nervous. I don't sleep very well at night. So,
what about Corbin? That's one of my favourite IPAs, and I always kind of know when I see a new batch of that come in, I'm always all over it. And is that still do well for you?
Yep. Yeah, really good. I think going back to what I was saying about West Coast being as popular as ever, whilst demand for Corbin is always there, and we only release it enough times during the year to ensure that it's, you know, it's well gone by the time the next one comes out, because it's important that beer is drunk fresh and it's not sitting on the shelf too long. So, but the last couple of batches have been very, very strong. The last batch we did was the first batch of the calendar year is always we wait until the new hops arrive from the US. It's all American hops. So as soon as we get this year's batch of hops into the country, first thing we do is brew the new batch of Corbin. So the first one of the year is always freshest and, in our opinion, the best. So that was February this year, which was, you know, about, I think it was about 4 weeks ago we released it. And it went incredibly well. I think it was in wholesale, three quarters of it was pre-sold before we even canned it. So, yeah, really well.
You know, you mentioned that packaged beer has always been a big part of what you do. How's the draft environment kind of changed from your point of view over the last few years? There's been a constant state of flux with always a lot more competition, new people coming in. I suppose some big competitors kind of getting removed and getting incorporated under the umbrella of the big guys as well.
Yep.
You know, have you kind of managed to retain and keep getting new taps on throughout this whole period?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? During COVID, obvious reasons that kegs were tough. We do everything in-house in Five Dock, so we got our own canning line, kegging line, everything. So we literally can make the decision right at the last second as to how much of a particular batch we're going to cans and going to kegs, and we're always getting better at it, but you know, try and forecast what we'll sell, how much of each we're going to sell, and make that call right at the last second. As we came out of COVID, so I guess the last year we've seen pack die off a little bit. It's quite obvious that I'm the same. I'm not drinking nearly as much at home this year as I was, 2 years ago. So we're seeing a bit of a drop off there. We're selling more kegs now than we ever have. So we're seeing everyone going back to the pub, and we're doing a pretty good job of getting tap space. Could always do better, but the competition feels fairly similar to it has the last few years, but I think we've been around long enough where we're getting a lot more longer term taps. So a few years ago, you'd be fighting for that rotating tap at the end of the bar that Lion and CB don't have. These days, we're finding ourselves in more of a position where we're on tap for a year or even more at some pretty trusted venues. And I think that's a much more comfortable place to be. You're not waiting till, our sales guys aren't getting out of bed on a Monday going, oh God, where am I going to sell all these kegs today? We're getting up on a Monday and, customers that have been around for a long time are reordering on a tap that's been there for a long period of time. We're seeing a little bit of a movement, but our keg numbers at the moment are highest than they've ever been.
What's your general optimism for the industry at the moment as a guy who's been around for a while now? And this is
obviously... You're saying I'm old, James?
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
This is obviously your second brewing business that you've had. The general mood out there is a bit, we've touched on some of this earlier in the interview, but it sounds like you guys are in a pretty good position and growing, but do you have sort of fears for the way things are headed at the moment more broadly for some of your industry colleagues?
I think a lot of the commentary up until now has been around revenue, right? We're selling as much beer as we ever have and all that sort of thing. We're feeling a lot of pain, and where I think the industry is feeling a lot of pain, and I think you could apply this to any industry around the world right now, is cost of goods. And the cost of making beer right now is astronomical. And so a lot of our focus is about trying to lower those costs. I've been doing it for a little while, and it's always tough to make a dollar out of making beer. We do this for the passion of the job. It's not, we're not here to make a lot of money. But we're looking at things like, power, I don't need to tell you how much that's gone up, power and gas. Our grain's gone up something like 30% in the last year. Wages, everything has gone up significantly. The problem that we have as an industry is that we can't increase our beer prices by that much because there's far too much competition. Yeah. So that's the real issue, I think, for our industry right now. I think most of the new entrants into brewing are where I would, if I was starting a new brewery, I would start a brew pub where I'm selling the beer across the counter. There is no way I would start a purely wholesale business. It's a tough gig out there and you need a fair bit of size. So I think a lot of the new entrants are looking at that model, which is fine. They're not providing too much noise out there. But for us, it's about trying to control the costs right now. That's the tough ask. And I think that's where, as an industry, we're going to struggle over the next year or two is containing costs because they're all going through the roof. A lot of us are really struggling, particularly this time of year because it's happening right now, which is leading into winter and all that kind of stuff. So there's quite a few challenges there for us to get through. I'm not quite sure how we do that as an industry, but that's where I believe a lot of the challenge is.
Any thoughts on, we've seen this week the announcement by Exit Brewing, for example, that they're pulling up stumps, which was obviously sad news. They're probably a brewery that got started around the same time as you guys and with a similar sort of home brewing background.
Yep.
How did that make you feel seeing that news?
Yeah, we've seen a few over the last few months, and I dare say, and hopefully not, but we're going to see more over the next 6 months, but the boys from Exit probably hit home more than others because, as you say, they've kind of been there the whole time I've been there, and great guys doing it completely passionate about this business, not just their own, but the industry as well. It felt like a bit of a line in the sand, to be honest, and hopefully not something we're going to see a hell of a lot of, but probably, you know, even though they're quite small compared to some of the breweries we've seen come into trouble in the last few months, it's probably the one that I sat up and looked at and got a bit worried about more than most.
Well, let's finish on a positive note.
Good.
what are some of the beers that people can look out for at the moment? Corbin's probably still in market. The King's one's been and gone. What else is in the pipeline?
Yes, we've got a couple of newer styles coming out for us. We've got a hoppy Schwarz beer coming out. Schwartz, if you're a massive bogan like I am. Schwartz beer. So really starting to explore. We've got we've implemented an NPD, or new product development program, in the brewery a few months back to really sort of explore, I guess, not just what the market wants, but also what we want to brew and what we'd be proud of as well. So coming out with a few different things over the next few months. On the Bowerroom side, we've got some more sour-based. The sour beers just take so long to develop. It's a real different mindset for me, right? I've been brewing hoppy beers that you want to get into a can and get out as quickly as you can, and it could be a 3 to 4 week time frame from when we start the beer to when it's released. Some of the sour beers that we're brewing can take, you know, the first sour release was over 2 years before I could get it into the market. So we've got some great, you know, things like Saison. We've got had a Saison that's been a traditional Saison with some funky cultures in it as well. That took quite a long time to be ready, and that should be released over the next month or two, plus a Flanders Red as well, which is one of my favourite styles in the entire world. Again, a beer that's taken us about a year and a half, close to 2 years, for it to be ready. So some pretty cool beers coming out in the Bowerroom as well.
Awesome. Can people buy those online direct, or is it only
in the Bowerroom? Right. So give everyone a good excuse to come out and have some fun in the Bowerroom. Yeah.
Very small production volumes then, obviously.
Yeah, most releases, they're only, I can't remember how many cases exactly, but it's enough volume just to keep the Bowerroom stock. So they're all available by the bottle in the Bowerroom, but each month we have we put a particular one of the styles by the glass as well.
And how are the pizzas going? That's an important question. You know,
it's a very important question.
Bringing Coles to Newcastle, opening a pizzeria in Leichhardt, the old, you know, Italian hub of Sydney. So, you're happy with your contribution to pizza in Leichhardt?
We did not take that decision lightly. And it was really about what I think I said at the start of the interview. We only want to do things that we are passionate about. And we are passionate about clearly beer. We're passionate about hoppy beer. We're passionate about sour beer and barrel aged beer. We're also really passionate about pizza. I know that. but good pizza. And so we had an Italian chef or a consultant come in and spend a lot of time with us in the development of the hospitality side of that business in terms of sourcing equipment and our process. So we're doing full fermented bases over 2 to 3 days. We're also using the same yeast out of the brewery in the brewer's dough, which I think is an amazing sort of concept. So we spent a lot of time trying to perfect that recipe as well. So relatively traditional Italian pizzas. I think we'd get thrown out of Leichhardt if we didn't do that. But we're really, really happy with them. And we didn't want to go to market with anything that wasn't the best that we can do. And we honestly believe we got some of the best pizzas in Leichhardt, which is a big call.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to get down there very soon and try them, and I hope some of my listeners do too. Mate, thanks for finally joining me on the show. It's been a long time coming. I think I've been thinking of getting you on for years.
Yeah, so I was going to say thank you for finally asking me. It's
thanks for giving me a window of a few weeks where you're not on any other podcasts. I'll just get you to sign that document.
Exactly. Yeah. No other podcasts for at least 4 weeks. But right. No, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me.